Whenever I'm a guest on people's podcasts, they often end it by going, "I think that was the longest episode we've ever recorded." So I hope they never say that was the best, the funniest, nothing. They always just go, "That was a long time."
Hello, my fellow confused and probably hungover 20-somethings, and welcome back to Navigating Your 20s, a podcast pointing you in the wrong direction with me, Kate Whittaker. Time for more drunken chats on the mishaps and mind boggles of adulthood. From the time you left your passport in a toilet in Prague to the time you got fired twice. So grab a beer, even if it's 10 a.m, and let's roll the titles. I'm so honoured today to be joined by viral sensation and the most relatable comedian possibly ever, Ali Woods. He's got 195,000 followers on Instagram, very casual, and he's amassed 11.4 million likes on TikTok. As a fellow York Uni alum and as someone who really brightens my day whenever I see him on my feed, I'm so honoured to be chatting to him today, just about all about his 20s and how it's inspired his brilliant, brilliant comedy. Hello, Ali, how are we?
What's up, Kate? What a wicked intro that was. Thanks so much. That's a better intro than my actual official bio, so thank you. I'm actually nicked that. How are you doing today, Kate? You all right?
I'm really good. I've watched a bit of the coronation. I'm feeling festive. I'm ready for many pints tonight. How are we doing? You're gigging at the minute, right? You're on a bit of a gigging tour.
I am. Well, I'm always gigging normally, but I normally do like 6 gigs a week, at least sort of 6 nights a week normally. But today, I have actually got a day off tonight. Not in order to properly celebrate the royal coronation. But I have my mate's 30th, so I'm at that stage of my life. So, yeah, I thought I'd actually take a night off for that, properly. So doing that tonight. It's funny, though, when you say, like, well, this weekend, what are you doing this weekend with the coronation and stuff? Because it's sort of like a loaded question. It's like a very political question, politically charged question. Because people are either like, what are you doing for coronation? As if, like, lol. Or they're going, but what are you doing for the coronation? I mean, they're like, because obviously this is a moment in history. So, and you just have to sort of gauge whatever their reaction is. I sort of just go with that. So if they give a like sort of chill question, I'm like, yeah, probably like watch a bit, like, but I'm going out singing pints and stuff. But if they're like giving the serious, like, oh, wow, isn't it amazing? I'm like, oh, yes. No, I've got the bunting up. I'm having Victoria sponge cake. It's fabulous. I just say whatever means people will hate me less. I go with that option.
Firstly, congratulations. I know a lot of your gigs that are coming up have sold out, which is incredible. And I've seen Ali before live, and he's bloody fantastic. He cured our Monday bank holiday blues / probably still a bit drunk / very hungover. What's the gigging been like for you?
My crowd. That's my crowd. You know, that's the people who come to my shows, Kate. Don't worry about it. You were one of many people in there who were intoxicated. They come to me and go, Ali, come on, tell some dick jokes and cheer us up. And I'm happy to provide.
It's so nice. So kind of you. How's the gigging been going? Is that, do you think, your favourite part of what you do? Or is it sort of just an extra bit? Like, how are you finding that so far?
Gigging's what a roller coaster. When it's one of those where when it's good, it's great. Like, nothing tops, for me in comedy, being standing on a stage with a room full of people, like, intently listening, getting it, connecting with them, feeling like you're not alone in your experiences, feeling like you're cheering people up, and just having that night, or, you know, whether it's 5 minutes, 10 minutes, an hour, whatever it is, just having that with people, I think is phenomenal. Nothing beats that. But then the lows are low. That's the issue, right? So you also have times where you're saying anything. You find anything I say funny, and you're just met with glares, people who think you're a dick, people who hate you. People who hate you. Okay, well, people who think you're a cunt then. People who hate you, they just... And the worst one of those is, as a comedian, especially with the ego as fragile as mine, as a comedian, what you want to happen is you want to struggle, die on your ass, come off stage and watch everyone else die on their ass and just be like, well, what a terrible crowd. But what often happens is I'll come off having not done well. Next person goes up and smashes it. And you're like, well, okay, well, it was an unplayable room by any stretch. So yeah, but the gigging is also like the craft. It's also, I think, you know, it's a sort of very wonderful pursuit where you get to, there's no end ever. You just get to play it to as high a level as you can. And that's the game. And you just do that and you try and get inspired and you try and work hard and you try and perform to as many different audiences as possible. And that's just the game. And it's enjoyable to have this thing that you can just technically just do forever.
Yeah. And this is the thing about comedy, right? Like, there's so many different styles of comedy. People have so many different types of humor. Like, how do you kind of gauge a crowd and be like, right, they'll find this joke funny, or oh, maybe they won't quite find this style as engaging? How do you sort of suss that out when you're there and you're on the stage?
It's tough. I mean, I like watching the act before me. Like, it's, I think hardest is opening at a comedy show, harder than headlining, I think, because often you're coming on just after an MC who, often comedy shows don't start on time. The MC doesn't have a lot of time to do it at the top. So they'll just be basically setting the scene, setting it up, maybe talking to one person, being like, guys, we've got a great show. And then you've just got to go on, do your stuff. And that can be tough because you can hit them with something you think is going to work. You can look around the crowd and be like, oh, they'll probably like this. Or you can hear the gig, oh, that gig's rowdy, or that gig's really polite. And you can think, well, I'll do this bit, I'll do that bit. Especially with someone like me where I don't have like a routine. You know, like a lot of comics, but there's different types of comics, but some comics will just have their material. That's it. That is my act, right? So I'm going to go and do my jokes that I've worked very hard to make as good as possible. I'm going to go do them. And look, if they like it, they like it. If they don't, they don't. But I'm trying to make this act as good as possible. But I'm not like that. I just like having, I have little bits, little routines that I bring in, I drop, I change, I do this. I see how I'm feeling. And also see how the crowd's feeling, what they might like. And so I think the answer is it's always tricky on stage. I think you can get a better assessment of it before you go on if you watch another act and you see what they sort of go for. But what you've got to learn as a comic, which I still struggle with, is ultimately you do have to just do the things that you really believe in, that you really like doing. And if they do like it, then great. But if they don't, then you have your integrity as an act. And what happens sometimes as well, okay, maybe 70% of the crowd didn't like it, but 30% really did. And they really connected with you because you're being vulnerable, you're being yourself. Rather than if you go and just go around to these random gigs and do loads of generic material about, oh, aren't relationships difficult and isn't marriage shit and I'm a bloke and this woman, blah, blah. You know, they're just, the set that I've seen so many different guys do, it's all men who do this, where I talk about GP receptionists, and then talk about GPs. And you know, it normally does well because people are, oh, GPs are annoying or GP reception are annoying. And that is not one specific comedian. That's a load of different comedians have this bit. But that can help you survive in a club because people can quickly relate to that easy. But no one's going to remember who you are. So sometimes you've got to be willing to do something creatively, a bit more ambitious, a bit closer to you, and be willing not to do well. But, you know, in the long run, that's going to be better for you because the people who do like it will genuinely connect with you. They'll remember you rather than just being like, oh, I had a good time. Don't really remember what they said, but I thought it was funny at the time.
Yeah, I love that. And I think one of the reasons, you know, you are so successful is because your comedy is so relatable. I think, like, most of my mates have seen the reel you did where it was like having like boring adult thoughts on a night out. And it's something that we all do. And it's just such beautiful humour because it's just so relatable. I think a lot of your comedy does kind of like draw on real life experiences and funny things that happen. How have you found your experiences in your 20s and at this age to sort of influence, yeah, your content and your humour?
Well, I'm very glad to be on your podcast, Kate. Let me tell you this. How about this? Because this is sort of like my exit interview for my 20s. I'm 29. This is a fantastically formal way to leave your 20s, to be asked, what did you like best about your 20s? What did you like worst about your 20s? You know, what do you think you could do better? You know, what do you think we could do better as your 20s? So, yeah, I mean, I think within that relatability stuff. So, for instance, that boring adult thoughts video. That's one where I'm a big believer in doing the work. Just do the work. It's the only way I can work. I have to set myself deadlines. I have to just say you have to do it. Otherwise, I could just get distracted and do other things. And that original, That's my fourth boring adult thoughts video. The one you talk about there about the night out. The first one I did, I remember saying to my girlfriend, I did the video and I posted it and I was like to her, oh, you know, I just did one quickly today. I don't think it was that good because I just thought, I don't know. It just seems so obvious to me. It just seems that you have these sort of things. And then when I see the amount of people who are just coming in on that, being like, oh my God, this is me. Like, it's a wonderful feeling when you're able to express and communicate something that you think might be quite mundane or just sort of you find interesting, but no one else cares about. And then you see these, the amount of people who do, I think that's fantastic. So I think, probably anyone listening to this, like, just push yourself, just do it. Like, you know, if you think something might be all right or something might be worth doing, just go do it. Just see, you know, there's no point just sitting on loads of ideas, right? And then, yeah, in terms of the 20s, well, like, I mean, that's where I think my content sort of changed. Like, I don't do this consciously. I don't have any strategy, no plan, right? I'll tell you that right now. I have none. There's no like, so I want my content to evolve when I'm in 2 years time and then 5 years time. And then I'm just like, I'm doing it while I'm just doing what I can. I'm trying to have fun, right? But what has changed, when I started, I did a lot more like bad date videos because I was just going on bad dates and I was hearing about bad dates from my housemate. So she, bless her, she was like, she would be quite on it with dating. Like, bless her, she, you know, she didn't love it, but she would be like, no, you got to get yourself out there. She'd come back, she'd just tell me about this guy and I'd be like, right, let's do that video. She'd just be like, that's, and some of them went so well because people were like, yeah, I know that guy. I'm like, I know someone who knows that guy. Like, that's basically, it's basically how it was. And also, so there were ones as well where I just thought about myself, maybe as a younger guy, maybe in my early 20s. So for instance, there was one about getting the last train, like the dude who like has the last train to catch. And I was like, I've definitely pulled some of those moves before or tried to, like the thing of like, oh, I mean, maybe we should just stay up all night. You know, I was just like, just use that, be that guy. And then now more recently, I've been in a relationship for over a year now. It's my long-term relationship. Woo! And now it's, thank you. Now there's a couple videos in there, sort of boyfriend videos, a little bit of relationship videos. So I think you can always evolve, but you just always want to relate to people. So I think the worst thing you can do is, I don't want to still be now trying to do like videos about being 23 and single because it's not true to me, right? So I might have done that before, but now I think as long as you evolve sincerely and earnestly, then people will still relate to it even because you're talking earnestly, even if it's not quite their demographic.
I love that. Do you draw on any sort of comedians for experience, like, you know, inspiration? I know you've done a lot of bits with Josh Berry, who I also am a big fan of. Do you kind of, you know, collab with each other and pull off ideas? Like, how is that creative process for you when it comes to finding inspiration from other comedians?
Yeah, I've got to say it's like a new thing I'm doing since I was able to quit my job this year. And I was like, well, now is a good time to maybe do some more collaboration stuff. With each comedian, I think it's different. Like, so you basically, I think what I do is I look at other content creators that I like, you know, that might follow me, and then I just reach out to them. Some people as well, some comedians I know from the circuit anyway, they do stand-up comedy and now they do videos as well, which was basically my journey, right? So I know them already. So I think it's good to always like touch base, and then also especially if your content's kind of similar. So me and Josh Berry take piss out of posh people, so we could do that sort of thing together. And me and Jack Skipper, another content creator, we do sort of more like British memes, like relatable stuff. So we can do that stuff together. So I think it's basically a case of if you're wanting to collaborate with another creative person, in my novice advice is at first just like chat through it. Don't be like, let's definitely do a video. We're doing like, just be like, would you be interested? Let's have a chat, see if anything works, right? And then what you do is like learn each other's creative processes. So for instance, I find that really fascinating. So Josh, he works with a videographer, right? He's got a camera guy and he does like a day of like really intense filming where he films loads with the camera guy and then goes and edits them. Jack Skipper, on the other hand, like he writes nothing down. He does writes nothing down. He just gets his phone out and just records and just does it if it feels right. So I'm sort of in between those two. So I chat with Josh and we maybe work a certain way. So we lay out a script. We try and make it a bit more detailed. I talk with Jack And we're more like, right, we've got the good idea. Maybe let's think of some punchlines and then just go for it. You know what I mean? So I think that you're basically meeting in the middle of your creative processes, basically. So try and talk a little bit of compromise on either side and then just go for it, man. I think when I started comedy, like, and I can still be very competitive, but it's mainly myself. Like, I see someone doing something, I'm like, Ali, why aren't you doing it? You should push yourself harder. You know what I mean? I'm not trying to look at them and be like, oh, they don't deserve that. That's a disgrace or whatever. Because they do. That thing, more people deserve stuff than there are stuff going around often, right? So, but now when you collaborate, and I anyone who's creating stuff, who's thinking of doing that, like, find people to collaborate with, because also it just gives you a new way of thinking, new ideas, like new way of, oh, they film that way, that's interesting, maybe I could do that a bit more. So they write out a whole script, oh sick, oh they don't write out any of the script, okay, that's well, maybe I don't need to put so much pressure on myself, blah blah blah. So you can just learn all this stuff. So I think definitely try and meet in the middle somewhere, have a chat it through, and then also just trial and error. Like, you don't have to pin all your hopes on it. Like, me and Josh, we're not sitting there being like, if this doesn't work, we're never speaking again. And at the same time, we're not saying that, like, this better work because we're just going to collaborate now forever. You just have to be like, well, let's try it. Let's see how it goes. And this did well, so let's maybe do more of that. This didn't do as well, so maybe we don't need to do that.
I want to take it sort of back to the start. What got you into comedy? Was it sort of a lifelong passion you found, or did you wake up one day going, I'm funny. I'm really funny. How did that journey start for you?
Well, no one told me I was funny, so don't worry about that. That was never part of the issue. Well, to be fair, it's one of those, like, I've got to give a lot of credit to my dad, or credit might be the wrong word, but a lot of blame to my dad. My dad was, from such an early age, he was a get me into like comedy programs. He likes making jokes. He likes things being funny. Has a lot of respect for the people he likes who make him laugh. And so he definitely helped me just realize that how important like comedy can be. And so we used to watch TV programs. He took me to my first like live gig, watching Bill Bailey at Wembley Arena. And that was like definitely a big part of it. But also, it's just one of those things where I'm not sure what it is, like a need for attention, wanting to be liked, wanting to be respected. I don't know what it was, but like, for as long as I can remember, I've always wanted to be funny. I've always wanted to make people laugh. So that's the first half of it. Because there's two questions here, right? There's one, how do you get into comedy? And two, how do you become a comedian? Because they're two questions. Because there's lots of people out there who will be well into comedy, who will think they're funny, who will never try comedy. They'll never try doing it, right? They'll never be a comedian. So the first thing is, I don't know what it is, but I can always remember wanting to be funny. I always wanted to watch comedy shows. I always rewatch repeats all the time, every time. Simpsons, Scrubs, Friends. I was just watching it all. I was just consuming it all, just all the time, right? I watch all Live at the Apollo's, watch all the panel shows, Never Mind the Buzzcocks, Have I Got News for You, Would I Lie to You? I was just watching it all the time comedy, right? But I was always scared to become a comedian because I thought the scariest thing is wanting something, trying it, and realizing you can't get it. That's scary. I always say this whenever I'm asked about it. It's not scary someone telling you, you know, you are not able to do this. That's not, because then you're like, well, the pressure's off. Okay. The scariest thing is like, you are able to do this, but you're just not putting effort into it. And that's like, oh, wow. Okay. So now it's like a home truth. And that was the thing for me. I was scared. I was scared because I was worried that I was going to start and then be shit. And then that was, no, don't worry about that sort of stuff. Just, I did comedy at uni, I did comedy at York, as you know, Comedy Society. It was a great place to start. Did improv comedy. Were you in the Shambles as well?
No, I wasn't. I think I went to see my mate Hannah, who you know, okay. But I never did it myself. I was too scared to go up and that, you know. Did it. Right.
Well, there we go. You're probably too busy, you know, having real friends and partying. I was doing improv comedy and trying to protect my virginity by doing that, which worked very well. So I was, but doing that, and then I did stand up because you know what the real truth of it is, Kate. The reason I did my first ever gig was because I broke my leg. That was the reason. I broke my leg, and at uni, first year, And I had to have surgery on it. And the doctor said, you're never going to like play football again. Right. And I really care about football. I love playing football. And so I was really bummed out about this. And then I started getting bummed out about my life in general. I just thought, like, what am I doing? I got into my second year uni. I wasn't doing a course that I particularly cared about. Like, it was fine. It was nice. But I didn't know what I was going to do with my adult life, you know. Suddenly, like, freshers was so fun. First year was so fun. Now, second year, I didn't know what I was going to do. And so over Christmas, and this would have been 2013, I made, like, a list of things that I could do or achieve that would make me feel better about myself. And one of them was do your first stand-up gig. So I did it. So that's what I did. So I did it. But then I didn't properly go for it, because it was one of those things where I'd done it now, but I was scared, like, if I put effort in, then maybe I'll just not be good enough. So what happened was, I finished uni, came back to London. I was working a shit job I didn't like, and I didn't know how to, like, cheer myself up. So what I did was, I wrote out little cards what I wanted to do in my life and how I could get there. Two things I wanted to do was be a professional comedian and then be a football journalist. That was two things I thought that I could do these things. And what I did in these little cards was, I just wrote in the simplest way the path to get these things. So football journalist, I said, write articles for free, write articles for some money, write articles for full income, football journalist. That was it. That's it. I tried to make it as simple as possible, seem cheap. Comedy was, do lots of open mic gigs, start doing, do well in competitions, get an agent, get on TV, become a professional comedian. This was before, this was in 2015, where TV was still a big thing. I still have not been on TV, but I'm a professional comedian. I'll skip that step. But that's what happened. I had to come to terms with the fact that I had to go for something that I really cared about, because it's so scary to think that you could actually achieve your dreams. It's so scary to think that. It's much easier to think, well, you know, I'm just not that type of person. I remember realizing that these people who I used to watch on Live at the Apollo, all that sort of stuff, come out, big shows. I used to watch their DVDs, Michael McIntyre, all that. I thought they just come out and I thought they just said things off the top of their head and they were just divinely funny people. And I had to learn that these people were just people who worked hard. They just worked hard at it. They were shit when they started and I was shit when I started. And it's just about working hard to be good, to be as good as you can be. So I'd say to anyone listening to this as well, if you've got any creative ambition or anything that's just difficult, like, just believe that you can do it and don't let that scare you. Push yourself to go and do it, because believe me, you can. I'm sitting here now, professional comedian. I don't have a day job, do anything. All I do is put on wigs and go out and make dick jokes, and I get paid. I get paid more for that now than I did when I was working in an office job that I hated. So, you know, believe in yourself and go and do it.
This is it. And I always say, the first thing you ever make will probably be quite shit. And that's fine. And I think it's just getting over that initial thing of, oh, but I don't know how to edit, or I don't know how to, you know, write this or do that. And it's like, that's so fine. I think it's just getting it out there, isn't it? And the first thing will be a bit crap. And then you build from there. And I think a lot of us, when we have these big dreams, we're like, oh, but I'm not as good as this person or that person. But you're seeing that person at the very pinnacle of their career. And, you know, I think when we're all starting out in whatever field it is, it's just about getting over that initial, I guess, perfectionism almost. We all want to be, like you say, liked and people to find us funny or good at what we do. Did you struggle with that when you first started, this idea of being perfect straight away?
100%. I'm not a perfectionist, but what I was really scared of was my mates thinking I was shit. Other comedians thinking I was shit. So posting a video and people on their phones going, oh my God, have you seen how cringe Ali's video is? Oh my God, that's so cringe. I remember someone gave me some good advice on the open mic circuit when I was starting, and they were asking me how comedy's going. I said, oh, I don't feel like I'm making the comedians laugh as much, because at the open mic circuit, you're not doing gigs to like big rooms full of people. You're doing it to tiny rooms full of basically other comedians that are on that night watching, and maybe 2 to 6 audience members. And I was like, I don't think I'm making the comedians at the back of the room like laugh. Like, that's what I wanted to do. And I remember the guy saying to me there, he was like, the comedians aren't going to pay your mortgage. Your friends, or these people that you think, oh my God, what if this girl I used to work with like thinks this is cringe? They're not going to pay for your future. It's people out there. You're connecting with people, right? So don't worry about what these the people close to you think, that the people around you, the people that might say, don't worry about that. Just, you're connecting with people way, way out from that circle. And they're the ones who are going to be your fans, who are going to get your merchandise, who are going to come to your shows, who are going to buy your stuff, who are going to listen to your podcast, whatever it is. So don't worry about those small people that you might feel a bit embarrassed by. I had that big thing for me, for sure, at the start. So go do that. And I'll give you this piece of advice as well that I got. And this is from Nigel Ung, who you might know as Uncle Roger, who is huge online. He used to do stand up. Well, he still does stand up, but I used to do stand up with him. He used to be based in the UK. And he was always nice to me. And he said to me, like, when I started doing video and stuff, he's like, negative comments are good. Negative comments are good because it means that your video is so popular that it's going outside your circle of people who are just going to go like, oh my God, babe's amazing. Ha ha ha. Like, oh my God, I crease, like whatever, because they're just your mate. It's going out. It's so popular. It's going outside that. And it's going on the feed of people who don't even like you, who don't even like what you make. But that's how popular your video is. So don't be scared of negative comments. As soon as you start getting the negative comments, we're in business. We're onto something. Here we go. Now we're getting out to the general people. If you're posting stuff and all your comments are like, oh my God, babe, another, how funny, like, blah, blah, oh my mate, that was so funny. And all of them are positive. You got to work on yourself. You got to do more. You got to get out there. So don't be afraid of negative comments. It means you're becoming successful.
Such a good way of looking at it. And also, I feel like negative comments mean that not everyone is finding, you know, your work enjoyable, which I also think is a good thing because it means that you're like making people think, you're making people react. Like you say, it's not just people going, yeah, this is good. You're making people feel strongly one way or another about your piece of art, which I think is, yeah, it's a really, really good thing. I know that you have just absolutely took off in recent years. And, you know, you've got people like Katie Piper commenting on your videos, you know, bigging you up and stuff. When did you sort of feel that you really gained that traction and that momentum? Was it just one video and you were like, oh, God? Or was it, you know, a gradual, what was the process like for you?
There's a couple moments I remember. The one is the first video that ever did any decent numbers was some random video I posted in October 2020 when I just started doing TikTok and Reels. And it was like, remember when we had that curfew at 10 p.m. in lockdown, crazy times. And it was like ending a date at 10 p.m. with the curfew and like the guy suggesting all these things you could do and all like trash things, like just sit on a bench, like hang out by the bins or whatever. And that did like 100K on TikTok views. And I was like, unbelievable. I was celebrating like with my friends, like, woo, you know, wow, wow, wow. That was a moment. And then I remember when I started Reels, some of my Reels were getting promoted by Instagram because Instagram was pushing Reels. So I was fortunate to get in on an early stage. And one of the Reels I posted was the first thing that ever properly went viral, which was in November when all the British people were just like, gets dark so early now, doesn't it? And that did like, I think it was 5.7 million on Instagram, that one did, on Reels. And I just remember thinking, God, man, that is insane. But you know what as well? I was then walking down the street being like, going to be hard getting anywhere nowadays because everyone's going to recognize me. I'm going to like, I'm just trying to get to the shops and probably going to get swamped. You got to stay COVID safe as well. You know what I mean? Oh my God. I was so delusional. I was like, oh, probably anyone who, you know, when people just glance at you, I'm like, probably a fan, probably nervous because they saw my one video that's done well. So I think those early ones were great because it just made me think, why can't you just go do these numbers? Why, like, this is crazy. Why can't you just do it? Like, it breaks the seal. Suddenly you're on the other side of the glass. You're like, you can just do that. You're not one of those people just looking at people's videos. And then other than that, I mean, I think it's just been, like, I try not to get too bogged down with the numbers, really. Like, I think it's nice, but I never think it's I'm never one of those people who are like really analyzing my videos, being like, why did this one only get this and this one got more, and then like, but this one had good engagement in Ireland, but this one had good engagement in Thailand, so what, you know, how am I doing? I just want to make stuff that I enjoy, that people enjoy, have a laugh with it, you know. So I don't care too much about that, but certainly, like, I think getting to 100k, I remember distinctly, I went into a coffee shop because I had a gig and there wasn't any space. Table. So this one girl was just sitting at this table charging her phone, and like every other table had like multiple people on it. And I just, I'm so sorry. Can I just sit here because I just need to and chill? And then I, and it was by the plug as well. So I was like, I can go on my laptop. And she was like, cool. And then she started just like chatting to me because she was just chilling. She didn't, well, personally, like she didn't love her life situation and stuff. And so we were just chatting about that and things. And then I kept checking my phone. She was like, oh, why are you checking your phone? I was like, I'll have a look at this. Like, I'm almost 100K. And then we just sat and watched it go to 100K. And she was like, oh my God, that's so cool. And I was like, yeah, sick in it. That's crazy. And then I was just like, this is so bizarre, but it's like so nice. Because that was a target I had in my head for ages. And I thought, oh, that's way down the line. But yeah, so there's moments like that, but I don't think there's ever a time where you think, well, certainly not for me anyway, at this point, where I'm like, oh, this is getting too much or too crazy or anything like that. It's just like, you just work away. Sometimes you feel like, you know, you've got a video doing well. You're literally walking around being like, I am the answer to the internet. Like, I am the biggest deal there. Everyone's probably like sharing my video right now. And I probably am just going to get swamped every time we go out. And then you post a video that's shit. And you're just like, I've completely lost it. I had one good idea and it's done. And now I have, I'm behind. I'm the algorithm. I don't know. I'm out of touch. You know what I mean? And it's just about riding that roller coaster.
Yeah, 1,000,000%. And it's interesting going back to what you said about when you had goals of, okay, how do I be a comedian? And being on TV was, you know, the pinnacle. And now I feel like we're in this really interesting shift of time where actually social media has probably overtaken that, you know, like on-demand TV, like Netflix and Amazon and social media and TikTok and all these short form content bits, which is great on one hand. But then on the other, like you say, you could constantly check and be like, how many views has this got? Whereas if you're just on live at the Apollo, you're not going, excuse me, how many people are watching right now? Like, you're not as aware of the numbers and the views and I guess the popularity of it all. How have you kind of found navigating social media? And I think when we grew up, especially, we're now both in our 20s, we grew up in a time where, God, Wi-Fi wasn't really a thing. It was really old technology and, you know, modems. And it wasn't, you probably couldn't really make it on social media then because Instagram wasn't used, TikTok wasn't a thing. Whereas now we're in a time where you really can. How have you kind of found that shift and social media being such a big thing?
Well, it's been useful for me. Because I have done well on it compared to my peers at the time. Like from where I was 3 years ago to where I am now is purely down to social media. Like the success is purely down to social media by getting people out there. I think, so I'll go for positives is that it's got rid of some of the gatekeepers. So there are people that you need to schmooze with, you need to do coke with in order to get on TV and to get signed and stuff like that. And those people just aren't as relevant anymore. They're not as important. They're now chasing the people who have followers. So that was what was great. You don't need someone to pick you up and be like, we're going to put you on prime time. You can just record stuff from your phone in your bedroom and go viral and connect with people and be out there and make a name for yourself and sell tickets through doing that, right? So I think that's brilliant. That's an amazing thing, which I love about the internet, right? Because comedies, like a lot of things, like especially in the UK industry, I think a few years ago, especially, it was like more elitist. It was more about what circles you were running in, about who you knew. Like in the entertainment industry, it's about who you know a lot of the time. And then social media just allowed me to get into rooms that I wouldn't have had access to before, which is great. And that's purely because of followers. That's not because like, oh, we've just realized like your comedy is actually now really great. I'm doing the same comedy, yeah? But it's just now they realize they can make money from me, right? Before, I wasn't the thing that they wanted, but now it's like, oh, we've actually realized that you're really funny. It's like, bro, I was doing this comedy before, man. Like, you just, like, what are you talking about? You can't fool me. But as you're saying, the negatives of it, and especially because we know what it was like, you know, at school, just sort of just getting out of school, just as social media was becoming huge, like not, like I feel for kids at school now, like it must just be everywhere. Like I know I had a thing at school with like, how many followers you got, oh, blah, blah, blah. You know, like people having huge clout because like they're doing videos that are going in or their pictures getting loads and loads of likes, whatever. I mean, I'm even era before you, like in a few years, you know, mine was just Facebook mainly and then like Twitter and stuff, but it was basically just Facebook and dumping loads of face photo albums and people getting likes and writing on people's walls and stuff. Like it was never a big thing, you know. It was sort of a silly like game that was played as well. Like it wasn't like as nasty. Like I can't imagine going to school with like Instagram now and just comparing like who's getting and seeing who's liking who's other photos and stuff like that, who's getting more comments and who's getting more, you know. So that's the negative of it, is that I know comedians, and I myself fall in this trap now, like, yeah, as you're saying, compared to Live at the Apollo where you're just on it, like you can just constantly analyze. And I know some people, they do really well from that. They're constantly analyzing and they're just that type of brain where that really works for them, because then they do really modify their content, blah, 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 and they can work with it. But other people, yeah, they're just, you just get completely, I don't know, just like completely bogged down by it, you know, and just addicted to it. And just your mood is completely dependent on how many likes you're getting at one time, how many followers you're getting at one time, you know. And so, you know, you just can't let that happen to you. So whatever you need, like regiment it, take breaks. If you only can be on your phone for this amount of time, whatever, or just to leave it, you know, just do whatever you can to because your mental state is more important than however many followers you got. Like I know people who've blown up, blah, blah, blah. And they have like a breakdown because they've just focused so much energy into it. So much energy into it that they've completely burnt out. They're not happy. They're not happy, you know? And that's what you got to understand. Like people watching these influencers and stuff like that. Now I've met more in them. Like a lot of those influencer stuff, they give the impression with the online stuff that they're like, just, you know, they're chilled out, they're whatever, haha, just having fun. But they are entrepreneurial, they are on it, they are analyzing, they're seeing what works, you know what I mean? Like, you're getting comedy where people are like, oh, you know, I'm doing this comedy because, you know, I'm just like, it's the only comedy I can do. No, you are choosing to do that comedy. You are playing the game really well. Like, you are entrepreneurial in that regard. And I think it's almost like a shame that people don't see that in some ways, but I guess it's like a marketing technique. So I think just whatever you can do to like make sure you're protecting your own mental state as well as like performing to the highest level you can online, then I think that's incredibly important.
I love that. Like you mentioned having a shift recently where you've been, you know, able to quit your full-time job and now you do comedy for a living. Like, congratulations. That is so exciting to do what you love every day. How did you go about that? Because I know there's lots of people listening that are in, you know, in bands, or maybe they want to do comedy or radio or whatever. And, you know, we've all got bills to pay, but you've got your passion that you're like, I want this to be my thing. But it's like, how do you even start? And how do you find the time to get good enough at your passion whilst you're working full time? Like, it's such a vicious cycle.
Yeah. So I can only speak from my experience. And, you know, mine wasn't maybe the most meteoric rise. As some people, you know, they don't work for very long and then they just are able to break it. But what I will say is that unfortunately, this is not the most fun advice, but it is sacrifice, right? For years, you know, I missed, it's cliched, but you miss birthdays, right? You miss out on a love life. Like I was working 5 days a week and then gigging 5 or 6 nights a week. So that's what I was doing every week, right? And look, I still managed to have fun, and don't get me wrong, like I don't want to like fetishize work in that, you know, you're not allowed to even have a break, whatever, because that's a very unhealthy mental state to be in. But if you want something, if you really want it, I had this quote up on my wall, which was like, dreams are hard. Like, that's why it's so incredible when you can get onto the other side and live it so much. Like if it was easy, we'd all be doing it, right? We'd all be astronauts and musicians and comedians and actors and ballet dancers and all, whatever you want to do. We'd all be doing it. So you've got to just really, truly believe that it will happen. Never doubt that. You can have doubt in a moment about what you're doing, whether you're doing the right, blah, 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 but never doubt that you can't make it. Always believe you can. Always believe you will make it. And then you just got to work as hard as you can without losing your mind, right? So I was very lucky in that my day job was very cool. You know, I worked well there. I wasn't taking the piss. I was doing what they wanted me to do. And I was going into the office and I was chatting with people and stuff. But when I realized I wanted to do comedy, I was open with them. This is what I want to do. So, and then they would let me go down to 4-day weeks. And I took a pay cut for that, right? I always had going to the office. This is before working from home as well. Going to the office, working 4-day weeks. And they're just being nice. Like, I have a very nice office. They're like, oh, I wish I had 4-day weeks. Oh my God. And I was always like, would you take a 20% pay cut? And they're like, no. And then I'm like, well, that's That's why I have them and you don't have them. Like, it's that's because you got to understand at some point, and this is what I realized, my time was becoming more valuable than the money they were paying you. Yeah. So you've got to work that out in your head. Like, how much money do I need and how much time do I need? Because at some point you start getting further along in your career, your creative ambition, you need more time to keep pursuing it, right? Rather than the extra couple grand they're going to give you. I always said this to other comedians with day jobs. They pay you to give up on your dreams. That's what that money is, right? It's not the money so you can go live your fantasy. That's not it, right? They pay you to quit comedy, to quit acting, to quit music, whatever you're doing, right? They pay you, and that's what they want to pay. So you've got to work out that money in your head, like, how much do I need for them to get me here, right? Because otherwise I shouldn't be here. I should just be working on my creative ambitions. So you got to make that assessment, right? You might have to cut back. You might have to budget and stuff like that. You know, I wasn't going on holidays. The holiday I had for my dad's 70th in March, I was away for 6 days. That's the longest I've been away since 2017. Other than that, I'd never had a holiday that long, right? I'd always, you know, my holidays from work, I was just using to go to Edinburgh Fringe Festival to perform there for the month in comedy. That's how I was doing it, right? So you got to believe in yourself, push yourself, work hard. And I think just make that assessment in your head, like, your time will become more important to you so you can build it sustainably, find work or ask your work if you can reduce hours or find work where you get reduced hours or whatever. But just build it eventually until you're successful in your creative ambition. That's what I did anyway. And I will say this final thing as well, like, whatever your creative ambition is, don't chase the money. Chase the quality of the products, right? So my focus was on being the best stand-up comedian I could be and making the best videos I could do. It was never, how can I make more money this month? Because if you're doing that, go work in finance, go do that, right? You're never going to out-compete other people in the creative field. People aren't going to pay to come to your tickets because it's the most fiscally responsible ticket or it's the most... that you get the highest profit margin on it. They're coming because you're the best at it. So focus on the quality. If you're a musician, focus on the quality of the music. The money will come. Believe me, that's what's happened with me. The money comes to you. If you improve the product, what you're making, the money will find you, right? Because more people are enjoying your stuff. And do you know what companies want access to? People. So suddenly you've got this audience, right? So focus on the quality of the product. The money will come. You'll just have to live off baked beans a little bit, right? But go do it.
And never underestimate the power of the British baked bean. They are fantastic, aren't they?
Exactly. Go with everything.
You touched upon Edinburgh Fringe just briefly there. Let's chat about that, because I know for a lot of comedians, that is like the pinnacle of, you know, comedy. And when you get there, you're like, I've made it. How have you found, is that still a big thing in the comedian world, do you think? Have you got hopes to go to Edinburgh Fringe more?
Well, I did my first show at Edinburgh Fringe last year, like my first full debut hour-long show. And I'm going back this year doing a work in progress. But Edinburgh Fringe used to be this huge festival, as far as I understand. And I've been going as a punter for maybe 15 years, since, because my family's in Scotland. And it used to be this festival where you see loads of new acts and exciting new faces of comedy. It's since become a theatre festival where you have to pay loads of money to go stay in a shit flat share, like 30 minutes out from your venue, to then do an overpaid venue where, you know, the shows that are getting lauded and, you know, people like that, oh, this is amazing, you got to see this or whatever. You never see those people touring. Like, it's gone away from the stand-up comedy. Like, in the last sort of 5-10 years, I feel like it's more theatre. It's like, what's a really interesting piece of theatre to go watch? And look, this is not to discredit those shows, because I've seen some of those shows and they are brilliant to watch. But I think it's got away from its stand-up comedy roots. So, you know, I don't think if you're looking at comedians that are selling out arenas, tours and stuff like that in the UK right now, not many of them have been like, oh, we've come through doing shows at the Edinburgh Fringe for the last 10 years. So there's some sort of disconnect there. I don't know what it is, But there's some reason why the Edinburgh Fringe, which used to break huge acts on the UK circuit, now it fails to break acts that go on to perform to huge arenas like they used to. You know, Mickey Flanagan got where he went up and won Best Newcomer. And he'd been going for ages doing the clubs. And he went up and won Best Newcomer. And he's a star. But for some reason, the Edinburgh Fringe isn't like that anymore. And I think you could say there's a lot of things, you know, in terms of how it's been run. The greed of people up there to charge, to be extortionate to comedians, to people trying to make it, to make money off of people's dreams. I don't know the ins and outs of the finances, but it's just become, and it's so difficult for people who aren't from wealthy backgrounds, who don't have financial backing to go do this anymore. So I think it still carries prestige for people who know of it. But if you're not going to Edinburgh and if you're not got any plans to, do not worry about it, mate. This is another one where social media can help you bypass that sort of stuff. You don't need to do it.
You are right. I remember reading Michael McIntyre's autobiography, actually, and I think he got himself in like thousands of pounds of debt because he went to Edinburgh Fringe for like 20 days to do 20 gigs, didn't get paid, was sleeping in tiny flat shares and was like, oh great, now I'm minus £10,000. And it's just this, in a lot of creative careers, it's so hard to do it, isn't it, if you're not absolutely loaded. And it's like, you have to work and you have to pay bills and it's just really hard to sort of get that balance. But I'm so chuffed that you've done it full time. That is so exciting. You've also got, you know, a podcast as well. All the plates are spinning, called All I Do Is Fail with your mate Tom Elves. How did that one come about?
So All I Do Is Fail, you can check that out. If you listen to this podcast, you're a podcast fan, go listen to All I Do Is Fail, check it out. If you don't like it, fair enough, but hoping you'll love it. It's just me and my mate Tom Elves and our producer Phoebe just chatting through the week's news. And we've got a couple of regular sections where listeners come in and it's good fun. But if you want just clips, you can check out our social media at AdivPod just for clips. So that came about. Me and Tom Elwes were in this comedy competition called So You Think You're Funny. And it's a competition you can only enter once in your life in comedy. And you have to do it in your first year. So it's 2017. We were gigging and we went up to do it. I'd never met him before. We were in the semi-finals of this competition. We both lost, got knocked out. Didn't make it to the finals. Very prestigious competition, by the way, this. Like, it's one where you look through the finalists of many years and they've gone on to great things. And so we went up there, failed. And then we were chatting about what we could do. And Tom was like, man, you got to do a podcast. Maybe you should do a podcast. And he was like, well, we could do one on failure. And so we called it All I Do Is Fail. So we originally used to invite comedians on to talk about failure and talk about times they failed. And then in lockdown, we just thought, right, we'll just do it ourselves. We'll just keep going. And now it's just evolved into this sort of just entertaining chat that we have every week where we're going through things, and it's super fun, it's super lighthearted. It's just supposed to be something you put on, you listen to, you have a laugh, cheers you up, you know, a bit of a fun hour away from the dreary world around you. So give it a listen, and honestly it's great. And you know what it's like having a podcast, like podcast listeners are the best. And anytime we've done a live show, it's been absolutely exceptional. So give it a listen if you enjoy it, if you just wanted something light to listen to, something a bit fun, then that's what our show is.
How do you, obviously your podcast is all about failure, what is your, I guess, perception of failure? Because I see failure as an amazing thing, and you can't get to where you want to be without failing at least 24 times. You know, I think failure is, when I was at school, I saw it as really black and white. It was like, if I try, I'll succeed. That's just how it is. And I remember getting rejected from a grad job in third year and being like, what? But I tried really hard. How is that possible? Whereas now I think it's a lot more fluid, and it's actually, I'm learning to be okay with failure and rejection, and I actually quite like it. I think it's good for you.
Yeah, I'm very similar. That happened to me with my Cambridge application, in that I just thought I'd gone to like a smart school, got in an exam and done well in exams and all that. And I just thought I'll probably get into Cambridge as well. And I got rejected from Cambridge. Got rejected from my second choice, got rejected from my third choice, as I ended up at York. And I was just, but that was the best thing for me, honestly, because it just opened my eyes, where it's like, it almost gave me freedom. Sort of, you don't you don't have to just keep trying to get the best thing that people are telling you is the best thing. You have your own path going on here. You can go and do it. I loved going to York. I love the friends I made there. No one from my school went there. I made a whole new bunch of friends. It was great. And that's the 30th I'm going to tonight is a friend from York, right? And so I think that with failure, like, I think the more you get used to it, the more you accept it, then you can go on and improve quicker. If you're, every time you're thinking, oh, what if I try and if I fail? What if I try and fail? You know what I mean? Like, you're wasting your time. Go try it out. You know what I mean? Even the best in any field aren't perfect. The best in any field, right? The best footballers, you know, they miss goals. They don't score every single time. You know what I mean? Whatever. The best comedians, they still have tough gigs. They'll still have, whoever in your head is the best comedian in the world, I'll find you someone who says, they're shit. That's just how it is. There's always what it is, right? So just go, fail, go do your thing. And the important thing is try and learn from it each failure. Try and learn why. Try not to be too hard on yourself, but just try and think, oh, what can I do differently? And once you start getting that freedom, you stop being scared of doing anything. The biggest failure is not trying. That's the biggest failure.
Just to finish off on then, what is next for you in the world of Ali Woods? You know, more podcasting, gigs, TV, like what's on the plate?
I'm doing it all. Problem with me, Kate, I'm terrible at focusing on anything, right? So I've got to just do everything all at once. So more podcasting, check out podcast, All of This Fail. More gigging, I'm still gigging all nights of the week. You can go to my website, Aliwood's Gigs, for my own shows. I've got them on there. So I'm doing I'm doing one in Brighton. I'm doing one in Hastings soon. So I'm doing outside of London as well. So if you're based outside of London, then come see. I've got a short film that's just got funding from a film festival. So we're looking to record that. Yeah, should be good. I'm having some meetings with some TV channels now about potential short stuff we can do, digital stuff we can do, and scripted stuff. So I'm looking at that. Looking at doing my own tour next year. My own tour next year could be on the cards. Nothing confirmed yet, but it's looking likely. So it's just all going on. But what you can do is just follow me, Ali Woods Gigs, and check out the stuff I'm doing. I didn't even talk about stuff online as well. I'm doing videos. I want to improve the quality of videos. I've got myself a new camera. I'll show you right now. I've got this camera here. Big thing as well, I'm dropping my first special. I think it's going to come out this month, I'm pretty sure. It's going to come out this month, May. Check that out on my YouTube. My first special, full comedy hour. So it's all going on, Kate. So I just want to, the problem is I've tried to like focus on stuff as well. And I just got to realize you got to do what comes naturally to you. And what I love most is just getting up and just doing creative stuff and enjoying it, right? And enjoying it as much as I can. Because if you don't enjoy it, what's the point, right? It doesn't matter if a video flops. Doesn't matter if a gig goes badly at the end of the day. Like, you'll just have those moments. But you just got to enjoy the process of getting up and doing it, right? So whatever you're doing, you know, creatively or otherwise, the important thing is you just got to enjoy it. Because everything else, in 1,000 years, this ain't going to matter. It's just not going to matter, right? So just go towards the things you enjoy it. Put your all into it, put effort into it, try and make it as good as possible. And I believe you'll be very, very successful.
I feel inspired. Thank you so much. You're absolutely wonderful and lovely and talented. And I cannot wait to see what you do next.
You don't know me at all, Kate. You don't know me at all. There we go. I haven't given an accurate reflection of myself on this podcast. I'm a mean man. I'm a bad boy.
It's lovely. It's lovely, everyone. Thank you so much for taking the time to chat to me today.
Not at all. My pleasure. Thank you so much for having me, Kate. Appreciate it. And, you know, when you set up that Patreon, everyone who's listening to the podcast, go donate to it and go support Kate. I hope you enjoy the other episodes.
And that's a wrap. Thank you so much for listening. If you've had a nice time, please do subscribe and leave a review on Apple Podcasts. And if you've got a topic that you want us to navigate together, just let me know. And why not binge all the other episodes? Give us a follow at Navigating Your 20s Podcast on Instagram and Facebook to stay up to date. And see you next time on Navigating Your 20s.